I finished the first five books of Roger Zelazny's Chronicles of Amber back when I was a teenager, when there were only five books, and I just finished my reread of them. Did they hold up? Yes. These books hold up. Hi, I'm Jim with Fantasy for the Ages, the father of this father and son show, where we talk about fantasy, science fiction, and other nerdy things we enjoy. Today, I'm coming with a book blast, spoiler light episode on the first five books of the Chronicles of Amber. If you enjoy this, don't forget to hit the like, and we hope you subscribe. Roger Zelazny published a whole mess of fantasy novels and short stories over a career of a little over three decades, with his first short story coming out in 1963 and his first novel in 1966. He passed away in 1995 at the early age of 58 due to kidney failure brought upon by cancer. A definite loss to the speculative fiction genre, as he remained prolific in publishing right up to his death, and a few more works even came out posthumously, including three more novels, the final one dropping in 1999. The Chronicles of Amber is one of his best-known works. The original five that I'm here to discuss today include Nine Princes and Amber, which was his seventh published novel, coming out in 1970, The Guns of Avalon, 1972, Sign of the Unicorn in 1975, The Hand of Oberon in 1976, and wrapping up with The Courts of Chaos in 1978. I came along to find these books around 1984, maybe 85. I read straight through these five, some of the earliest adult-level fantasy fiction I read. I remember enjoying them, but not fully appreciating or understanding everything that I read. Having just finished the reread, literally today, I understand why. Boy, I was lacking a whole lot of life context and fantasy fiction chops. Reading these books again now, I found them absolutely fantastic. A highly creative and imaginative story that carries straight through all five books. I'm so glad I reread them. And I'm excited that my son Zach plans to read them this year as well. He's going to enjoy these. I'd recommend them to any fantasy fiction fan. And despite them being from the 1970s, they really don't feel all that dated. They're pretty timeless in their story. There are three exceptions that jump out to me that certainly place them in the 70s. You're not going to find any super strong female primary characters. The women are there, but mostly secondary to the male roles. Even with the couple that have more agency, they end up feeling secondary to the men. As with most books at this time, the second thing that stands out is the men are manly men, and the women are quite feminine. The fact that one of the women is quite accomplished with fencing is seen as, ooh, what a significant novelty, a rarity. Yeah, the gender roles are quite traditional. I don't mind that in a book that I read, but I know not all readers will feel that way. And the final element that dates this in the 70s is the cigarette smoking. Holy cow, smoking cigarettes is a big aspect of these five books. That's a product of the 70s for sure. I was a kid, my parents smoked, everyone smoked, I hated it. Because I was trapped with cigarette smoke. It's not that no one smokes anymore, but it's certainly less prevalent, particularly due to the documented health hazards of cigarettes. It is not mainstream, like everybody's doing it anymore. Of course, we see a lot of other things smoked in novels these days, but that's another story. Sticking to my spoiler-light format for this episode, here's what I can tell you about these five books. The focus of the series is Corwin of Amber, his family, and the world as he knows it, which is very different from ours. we come to understand through Corwin that amber is the real world, and all other worlds you might experience are different variations of the true amber. Zelazny basically is playing around in a new way with the theme of parallel universes. Every world you can think of exists, and Corwin and his kin can travel between them all. Starting from amber, the real, the primary world, Corwin and his kin can simply move from there by changing mentally one aspect of amber. And ta-da, we're in a new world, a new dimension, a new reality, or whatever you'd like to call it. For example, think to yourself, I'm going to add electricity, because that's not a thing in amber. Now you're in a world that's just like amber, but it has electricity. It's a new world. Or take away the color green. It's just like amber, but there's no green anymore. That's a new world. And once you've changed one thing about the world around you, there's a trickle-down effect. You never just change one thing. Changing one element causes this impact on a corresponding number of things, and it is a very different world. You know, kind of like the butterfly effect. As Corwin and his family move through dimensions, they aren't simply changing one thing at a time, but that's how they process it. They change one thing and poof, everything's different. Then they change another thing and poof, it's a whole nother world. And they keep doing that as they move through different dimensions, just shifting this, then that, then that. Zelazny gets into some philosophy in this series that the characters actually ponder that I found rather fascinating. They try to figure out, you know, are they truly changing things mentally by moving through these worlds and thereby creating new dimensions? Or are these places always present? And by shifting certain facets in their minds, are they simply moving between worlds that always exist? There's no real answer to this question. It's kind of a deep one, though, and it gives readers something to chew on. You learn that as the characters go further along from amber, the more chaotic everything gets. I mean, you think about it. You've got the real world, and then you change this, and you change this, and you keep changing things. Things get crazier and crazier. That makes sense. But here's a question that comes up. Just how crazy, how chaotic can you make things and still be able to handle it and still survive? Is there an ultimate chaos beyond which no one can go further? Question to ponder. As fascinating as all of this is, though, these dimensions, parallel realities, whatever you want to call them, it's really just backdrop for the primary story in these five books. And that's the strife between the siblings, Corwin and his brothers and sisters. The strife that exists over what happens when their father, King Oberon, disappears. No one knows what's happened to him. He didn't leave any message as to where he was going, and he's been gone a long freaking time. They're presuming him dead now. So if the king is gone, who gets to be king? Oberon had never decreed who would be his heir. And his relational proclivities actually made that a little complex. It's not cut and dry. It's extremely gray. And this causes some real stress, contention, outright hostility. I've revealed a bit more than usual by saying this, as the first book starts with Corwin waking up in a private hospital with amnesia, not knowing any of this. He doesn't even know who he is at that point. Zelazny uses that as a great writing tool to start off the series. For as Corwin stumbles along, rediscovering who he is and what he's connected to, we get to discover it too. But most of this is known by the end of the first book, and it's the foundation for the series, so I feel comfortable sharing as much as I have. What makes these five books particularly delightful is what we come to know versus what we just think we know. There's so much going on behind the scenes, with the siblings and others playing games within games, manipulating each other, setting each other up, betraying each other. There's a real vibe of Game of Thrones that I see in this, although this came out a long time before Song of Ice and Fire was even conceived of by George R.R. Martin. We've got these characters all trying to get at each other and take advantage, try to come out on top, mostly out of a desire to advance one's own agenda, which might be for the good of all, might be for the good of a particular other that I'm supporting, or it might just be for the good of the one. Deciphering all of this over the course of the books, of what's really going on and who's behind who and who's supporting who and who's really for everybody, is a great deal of the fun of the read. I fully recommend these books. They are interesting from start to finish. Their pacing is great. The writing style is easy to engage with. Each novel of these five is fairly short and just boom, 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 moves right along. If you do them via audiobook as I did, the whole set of five is only about 25 hours of listening time. To put that into context, book one of Brandon Sanderson's Stormlight Archive, The Way of Kings, is 45 hours. Robert Jordan's The Eye of the World is 30 hours. So these are short little fantasy books by today's standards and are really a quick read, which is particularly good, seeing that just after I finished reading them as a youngster, Roger Zelazny started dropping five more books, which I knew nothing about. I didn't even learn they existed until a short time ago, and I'm reading them now for the first time. I'll have another episode coming out soon as I get through those five books, which likewise aren't very long. But for now, this is where I'm going to leave you. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Thanks for watching. We'll talk to you next time.